All right, Mr. Hassan Ali, how much do you think the conflict in Yemen is sectarian-based as opposed to a foreign scheme which is trying to instigate sectarian strife?
I think that anyone who thinks this is a Shia-Sunni equation really doesn't understand the region, and with that, with the utmost of respect to my co-guest, it is being painted with the veneer of sectarianism. And there is this talk of, oh, Iran is leading the Shia faction, and I don't know, Saudi is leading the Sunni faction, and all of this insanity. And this has no basis in reality. Because at the end of the day, this is, I suppose, a campaign that can only really be described as one between two axes. And the axes are not sectarian. The axes are down to axes that are in alliance with the Zionist project, and those who oppose the Zionist project and are commonly referred to as the resistance bloc. Everything we see Saudi doing, everything we see this entity doing, and Egypt doing, and all of these other people, we see what they're doing as being in fit, something which assists and helps the hegemony of the Zionist entity and his and her allies. Everything we see the Houthiin doing, we see the resistance in Lebanon, we see the Syrian Arab army and the Syrian government in their resistance, the Iraqi government and its resistance, and whoever is helping the Iraqi government in making that resistance against Daesh, these are movements which are helping the people. And this is evidenced by the way the Houthiin were so well sort of taken to, yani the people took the Houthis to their hearts. They came out in the streets. They had a referendum, they had a discussion, they created a scenario where they could build a government free of Saudi control, free of people who are essentially puppets of Saudi and Israel. But of course, Saudi, Israel, they don't like this because it means that they've lost. And Saudi, unfortunately, needs to understand one thing. Its days are numbered. Now that you've got Saudi people paying taxes, which is something unheard of, you know, these people, they didn't know what tax was. You know, they thought us who pay taxes in the West were stupid, right? Now you've got Saudi people sweeping the streets and running taxis. This is the time where the Saudi entity is finished. And also the entire idea of a country named after a single family. This is a bizarre thing in itself, and this should have UN conferences as to how can you name a country after a family. Otherwise, England should be called Windsor England, after the royal family over here. There is nothing good that will come out of this when this is painted with a sectarian veneer. The sectarian veneer is a misdirection. Mm-hmm. It is designed to move people's focus away from the reality and to say, oh, this is just a couple of bunch of Muslims from different sides who are, you know, fighting the odds and whatever, and it's a problem there. No, this is a problem of attempting to control resources, control the lives of people, and to prevent self-determination. If we need any evidence on this, we can see now Egypt is supporting this Saudi aggression on Yemen. And Egypt is run by the dictator Sisi. If you turn his name around, it becomes ISIS, which itself is revealing, who is the enemy of democracy and what the people want. So, you know, really, anyone who paints this in a sectarian veneer is actually working in tandem and on the side of those people who are behind the bloodshed in Yemen, in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq. And with that, with the utmost of respect to my co-speaker, I'm not saying anything against you per se. I feel you're mistaken, though.
Right. Mr. Corrigan, who do you think benefits the most from this conflict, both in the region and out of the region?
Well, obviously the Arabs and the Muslims do not benefit. So I think Israel benefits massively. I think that the people want to see the Arab world fighting against itself, no matter how you label it, benefit. And I think, you know, the British and the Americans will benefit too, even though they realize that there may be a lot of problems. And also the feudal families that are propped up by the Americans and the British and Saudi Arabia and Qatar, Kuwait, et cetera, those places also benefit because they don't want a popular movement. But with respect, my friend, I don't think our opinions are that different. I think people are trying to promote a sectarian division to control the area, to exploit it, to create chaos, and of course, to weaken the societies. And this is being used by the Saudis as a way of maybe shoring up support amongst the Sunni population And of course, I think some Shia leaders are doing the same thing. But I agree that it's not a sectarian war per se. There's resource issues, there's political power, there's independence issues. These are the things that really people are fighting about. But there is a way of mobilizing people, and they're trying to mobilize it in this Shia-Sunni fight, which has been maybe oversimplified in the West. But I think it's also a mistake to say that this is also, it's working. You know, there is, you know, a conflict between the Sunni population and the Shia population in Iraq and in Syria. And now we see it in Yemen. And of course, there is a Shia minority population in Saudi Arabia that probably is also being viewed with a lot of fear by the Saudi royal family. And they are very weak. They're down to about their last one or two sons of Ibn Saud. And once the last sort of sons of Ibn Saud, you're probably going to have a civil war in Saudi Arabia between the competing factions of the Saud family. And of course, there are other players there too that do have a lot of power. But, you know, I'm not saying this is strictly a religious issue. It's a lot more. Religion is just the way you mobilize people, you manipulate people, you try to get them to fight amongst each other. And I think to some extent it is working, unfortunately. I don't think it should be. You know, Muslims should say, we're all Muslim, we're all Arabs, we can come together, we can solve our problems. We don't need to try to destroy each other. And by destroying each other, they're not benefiting themselves, they're just benefiting their enemies.
Ms. Hassan Ali, Ansarullah has indeed promised a strong response to those who invades its country, and of course it will will engage in that battle indeed. But what if Ansarullah fails in this battle? What would that tell us?
I think what needs to be understood is whether, first of all, you have to define what is failure. Ansarullah is a resistance movement. And in the same way as Hezbollah in Lebanon was a resistance movement, sometimes it had good days, sometimes it had bad days. It is virtually impossible for a resistance movement to actually fail until every person who believes in the ideology of resistance is taken out. That's not going to happen. So even if, God forbid, Yemen is occupied by Saudi or whoever, you know, whatever brand they put on it, I think the idea of resistance will remain. So it won't make any, of course, people will be hurt, people will be killed, whether Ansarullah or Yemen as a whole is victorious or not. But to suggest that what would happen if Ansarullah will be defeated, I don't believe it can be defeated. Ansarullah is similar to Hezbollah, similar to the Palestinian resistance movements, to any resistance movement, any.
And while you're at it there, Mr. Hassan, speaking of Ansarullah's allies, Hezbollah, Iran, and of course other resistance groups, do you think these resistance groups, its allies, I mean, would come to its aid?
That is a question I think would be best asked to the leadership of the resistance in Lebanon and to Iran. But if history is any sort of indicator, every resistance movement, regardless of which, I suppose, name or label it takes, has very similar, goals, to resist against the tyranny and to help liberate its people. And every freedom-seeking person will be supporting the resistance movement, even whether it's called Hezbollah or Hamas or Ansarullah or whatever, it doesn't matter. So whether they will directly come to the assistance of Ansarullah in Yemen or not, I don't know. However, having said that, yes, this is where I believe a lot of people are saying there is a risk, because they feel that potentially Iran or Hezbollah or something like this will come along and it will become a more regional war. I'm of the opinion, I don't think something as obvious as that will happen. This is not the first time that Saudi has attacked Yemen. This should be remembered. This has been going on for many, many years.
All right.
And thankfully, Press TV has been reporting it. But I think the Saudis should learn lessons from what their Israeli counterparts experienced in Lebanon, and they should understand that bombing and killing serves nothing.
Indeed.
And ultimately, all the only return of that is to have an imbecile like Netanyahu as your head. And I'm sure the current Saudi king doesn't want to see himself as someone as ignorant as Mr. Netanyahu.
All right. And one final comment from you, Mr. Corrigan. What kind of a picture do you see for Yemen in the short term, very briefly?
I think it's going to be a mess. But I think that the Saudi regime is first of all, very weak. It doesn't have a lot of legitimacy. I don't know that the Saudi troops are really going to fight that hard for their feudal overlords. But if the popular resistance and the Hutus stand their ground and fight, they're fighting for the country, they're fighting for the lives, they're fighting for a lot of good ideals, the independence of the country, they may get support from the people in Yemen. And Saudi Arabia is probably going to get its nose bloodied and perhaps could suffer defeat. But Saudi Arabia's got huge resources. They've got massive amounts of money. But the legitimacy of the regime is weak. And I don't know if the troops are really going to fight for them. I think, you know, the attitude of the defenders of Yemen is, and you know, they're going to fight hard for their society and for their own survival, that the Saudi troops, I don't think you're going to have the same sort of motivation and drive. And Saudi Arabia, of course, is afraid of Iraq, they're afraid of Iran, they're afraid of any sort of popular movement, they're afraid of their own Shia minority. And I think this is, and they also think they're afraid of Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. So this right. is a very difficult situation for Saudi Arabia.
All right, so we'll have to leave it there. Many thanks to our guests, Shabir Hassan Ali, activist and Islamic scholar from London, and Edward Corrigan, international lawyer and human rights attorney from Ontario. Thanks to both of you gentlemen there for your input and political inputs regarding the situation in Yemen. And of course, Press TV will be keeping a close eye on the situation in Yemen, and we'll keep you up to date on the situation going there as it's developing as we speak.